15th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight... So, Mario Kart came out today.
Mario?
And, that's all we've been doing since we got it.
Mario. Yeah.
And, it's video game day, coincidentally enough. So we're gonna talk about Mario Kart, but we're gonna, try to hold out and talk about anything else, and we'll, see how long it takes before we end up just talking about Mario Kart anyway.
So start your timer, and, yeah, it's not gonna last very long at all. I mean, it's hard enough trying not to talk about it. Any second I could just stop podcasting and go play.
Yeah, even though we can't play online, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, all right. Oh my god, we talked about it. We couldn't hold out for more than 2 seconds.
So anyway, did you go to a GameStop to get this?
I went to a GameStop, and...
You didn't go to that GameStop, though.
Not the horrible GameStop in the mall near us with the angry girl in it. I went to the good GameStop in the city, and it is a good GameStop, but I made the mistake of going during lunch when it was kind of busy. Well, that was my first trip there, and they called me last night and said it'll be there afternoon. So I went at like 12:31.
Wait a minute, you went at 12:31?
No, between 12:30 and 1.
You realize afternoon goes all the way until about 4.
Yeah, I know, but they didn't say afternoon, they said afternoon.
Did they say the words afternoon?
It was two words.
Okay, I'll just take your word on
that.
They
didn't say you can come pick it up in the afternoon. They said you can come pick it up anytime afternoon.
And you trusted them.
Well, no, actually, I didn't trust them. But that was the only time. I figured, you know, I want to get it as soon as possible, and that was my opportunity to leave work. So, hey, I went to check.
Huh?
It was better than sitting in my office doing nothing. So, of course, it wasn't there, but it pissed me off, not that it wasn't there, because I kind of expected it to not be there that yet, because, you know, UPS or whatever always sucks. I mean, half the time I've ever gone to pick up a pre-ordered thing on the day it comes out, it's just not there yet. It happens all the time.
You know, I've learned to just wait one day.
Yeah, but I couldn't wait one day for this, and I'm glad I didn't, but...
Or I just tell you to buy it, and then if it's there, you spend the time and buy it for me, and if it's not there,
well,
it didn't take me
any time when I went back after work at like 4:30 to go get it. There was no one in the store, and I just picked it up.
Yeah, after I wasted all that time, I didn't waste any more time.
Well, the point is that it kind of pisses me off, is that with barely, you know, not a large amount of money or effort, GameStop can make a system where you go online, and you see the exact stock of every GameStop, and you see the exact hour and minute when things are going to arrive and what quantity.
You know why they don't do that? Because people like us are actually not their primary customer.
Yeah, but the point is that there's a whole lot of people. There was a big long line at noon. Half the people in that line were there for something else besides just buying a game. They were pre-ordering. They were doing something weird. They were selling back something.
And you know what? You know what? If everyone who was standing around stayed, no matter how long the wait was, then they have no incentive.
Well, some people were leaving. The thing is that the way they keep a lot of the customers from leaving is they only have one guy at the register, and everyone else is a salesman who tries to keep you from leaving. But anyway, it just bothers me when someone could do something that would benefit them and others very easily by using computers and things, and they just don't do it.
See, I don't think it really would benefit them that much monetarily. Remember,
I think it would benefit them a whole lot, because if you go online and you know for sure that this minute that GameStop down the road has what you want, you'll go over there and grab it, and you'll start doing that instead of going to the EV. Well, I guess they're the same company now, but as opposed to some other store, you're sure that the GameStop has it, and you go online and you...
But you just went back to the same GameStop that didn't have
it
before anyway.
I had already pre-ordered the game.
Oh.
But that's not the point.
Yeah, whatever.
Think about this. Right now, I'm not really super loyal to any game store. I go wherever is convenient, right? But if GameStop implemented something like that, or EB implemented something like that, and I'm kind of anti-EB right now, I would just go there exclusively, because I could always be sure that it's not going to be a wasted trip. All right.
So what's this I hear about the Marines got a new weapon?
So they got this weapon in Iraq, and it's thermobaric in nature. Apparently, it's a shoulder-mounted sort of rocket thing with a warhead. Shoulder-mounted assault weapon, right? It's described as NE, novel explosive.
Uh-huh.
It's a thermobaric chemical thing, which I don't know enough about because I'm not sciencey enough. But it ignites the air and then produces a shockwave of unparalleled destructive power.
Unparalleled.
And they see some pictures here. They shoot this rocket at this brick square building, right? And the rocket goes into the building. It blows up, right? And the explosion is kind of big. It knocks the roof off, right? But then there's this shockwave, and what's left from four solid brick walls with a window and a doorway is just a pile of bricks. One rocket, shoulder-mounted.
Well, you know, that's what you get when you spend orders of magnitude more money than every other nation in the world combined on your military.
Yeah, but usually, you know, military stuff is pretty crappy. This is pretty good.
Don't you remember Sipe?
Yeah, Sipe.
And all those things? No, Sipe was the prototype. Now it's called something else.
It's called something warrior something. It's just, all Sipe is like, it's a gun and a whole computer, wearable computer combat suit thing.
Yeah.
But this is just a badass rocket that's really useful because you can freaking, you know, if there's a building, let's say there's a bunch of guys in a building shooting out the windows at you, you shoot one of these things and their building falls down.
Yeah, but we're the U.S. We just send an airstrike or something.
Sometimes, but I think they're actually going to use this. They're actually using it right now in Iraq all the time, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Like, they just got it shipped in, and now they're using it
all the time. Yeah, because the thing we need to be doing right now is destroying more buildings over there. You know, winning the hearts and minds of the population.
It's a cool weapon, despite the bad uses of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know. I can't deny it, because I got to say, whenever I see a new fighter jet, I always go, ooh.
It looks cool.
And it's fast.
I want one to fly over my house.
No, you don't. I live next to friggin' Selfridge Air National Guard Base for most of my childhood. And the first time an F-16 flew over, it was awesome. The 7,000th time, I wanted to throw a baseball at it.
Yeah, but I didn't live next to an Air Force base. And when I go to a sporting event and they have the flyover at the end of the National Anthem, it's wicked cool.
Every now and then, they'd like break windows because they'd release the afterburner or something over a neighborhood.
Geniuses. At least it's less damage than a thermobaric rocket.
So, Mario, Amazon is doing something kind of cool. I mean, Amazon generally is kind of on top of this whole internet business thing,
yeah,
considering how
good.
Profitable they are.
You know, normally, you know, you think that someone big and profitable like Amazon kind of a little evil. No, they're kind of normal. I'm neutral on Amazon. I buy stuff from them when it's good, you know.
Yeah, well, now they're trying to implement tagging.
All right. So now it'll be that much easier to find stuff.
Yeah, and it's just a prototype system right now. It's kind of a beta. And they're letting about half their users see the tags just so they can experiment and screw around with them. I have no idea what the criteria are. So if you have an Amazon account and you log in, you might see these tags. And they're changing all the time, and they're not sure what they're going to do with it yet.
It's pretty cool. I could go around Amazon tagging some stuff. You know, so people can come up with tags to be like... maybe kind of replace the semi-not-so-useful wish list thing, you know?
Yeah.
You set up some tags like, these are the cool somethings, and then you can have a page that, you know, for the tag that lists all those things and then share it with people.
Maybe this will be a prime opportunity for us to try to push our flim-flam tag.
Flim-flam tag is a good idea. I see people marking things as flim-flam that aren't is the only problem.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you could do about it.
We gotta try. Plus, one of the cool things is a lot of non-geeks use Amazon, and they'll see tags, and Amazon will probably explain tags in a way that they'll understand, and it'll make tagging, hopefully, a more accepted technology. Maybe people start finding the delicious.
Well, a lot of people are using the tags on Flickr and stuff, and they know what they're doing.
Yeah, those are generally more geeky people.
Generally, but you'd be surprised.
I think Amazon could be the tipping point.
Might be. You know, but I don't think that a lot of people are going to go through the effort of tagging things. And, you know, they're not going to get the full power out of the tagging. They're going to kind of...
We could talk about our things of the day.
Yes, I knew you forgot something. Look at you not holding out, you druggie.
My thing of the day, I ran into a picture that someone made. And what they had done is they took every single Playboy centerfold for like a decade and they mathematically averaged all the images. And the resulting image is kind of neat looking. That's all I got.
It just looks like this fleshy blob.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed is that you can very clearly see in this amalgam image some thighs. It looks like, generally, the women are always standing in the same position in the picture.
Yeah, you know what else you can see? You can kind of see this kind of little shadow of cleavage.
Yeah. And, I wonder what...
this blob of hair.
I wonder what photographic elements the Playboy photographers were focusing on when they decided to set these centerfolds up.
All right, so my thing of the day, oh my God. When I found this, it was on the Anime News Network. I was just like rolling around the office practically.
Uh-huh.
So, you know the Azumanga Daioh guy? What's his name?
Azuma?
Yeah, his last name's Azuma, or his first name, because it's Japan and they say the names backwards, right? So... he makes the Azumanga Daioh, which is pretty hilarious, and he also makes the Yotsuba, which is his current awesome, and it's equal, if not more awesome, but there's a site, I think it's by him or by a crazy fan. It's a Japanese site, so I can't read it and I can't know, but it's got a bunch of Flash animations that are all with his stuff, and one of them was the opener to... Azumanga Daioh, but he replaced all the characters with Yotsuba characters and Yotsuba things. And it's the hilarious if you know what those things are.
And if you don't know what those things are, find out.
Yeah, or else you suck.
I imagine we'll talk about them on one of our anime podcasts.
We definitely should. There's a manga and an anime of Azumanga Daioh, and there's just a manga of Yotsuba, but it's coming out really quick.
And I imagine there'll be an anime about it.
Eventually, maybe one day. I hope there is.
So Mario Kart.
Oh my God.
It's video game day. Mario Kart is fantastic.
You know, before I played this Mario Kart, you know, GBA Mario Kart was the best because unlike the other Mario Karts, which are pretty much just random, the computer cheats and items mean everything, the Game Boy one was actually racing was the most important. If you raced well... it didn't matter what items came up, you won, right? The DS one, they subtracted that a little bit, but they fixed it because the items don't do as much damage. You get hit by a shell, you recover a lot quicker, you know? So you can't avoid the shells anymore, but you recover, and it's really good. It's better than the GameCube one or the N64 one or anything. Oh, my God.
See, I've got really no reference because the last one I played was for the Super Nintendo, and I had no interest in the franchise for a long time. And this game is awesome. I can't deny it.
Yeah.
It's a Mario Kart game, so, you know, you pick a character, you pick a car, and then you race and you throw things at each other.
Mm-hmm. They got a lot of good track selection. Some of my good tracks from the Game Boy One are in there. You know, the new tracks are really high quality, especially the Waluigi pinball.
Yep.
The freaking speed tube. What other tracks are really good?
I like Delfino Plaza myself.
Delfino Plaza.
With the long drift around that fountain.
The new Rainbow Road is all right, but it's easier than previous Rainbow Roads. But it's not easier than previous Rainbow Roads if you want to really turn up the speed, which it's a good balance.
Of course, the main thing about this game is that, one, because it's on the DS, it's wireless, so you can just play with 8 people in one room and all race.
You could do that 4 people with the Game Boy, but...
It was terrible.
You had to sit near each other with the cables.
You sit near, you mean hunch over each other. Those cables were like 4 feet
long. And you could play with 8 people on the GameCube, but you needed 2 GameCubes and 2 TVs and 2 LAN adapters and a wire.
No one has that.
People have it, but not many.
Nah, no one. No one in the world.
There are people, but not many.
Now, the main thing about it is that this is not just Mario Kart. This is kind of the launch of the Nintendo DS Wi-Fi.
Well, there was also Tony Hawk's Skaterland. Well, SK, the number 8, Erland, is also using the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, because that's going to be a fantastic game.
It's, oh my god, it's out now, but and kids are playing it, but not me. You won't catch me with that.
Now, we actually got to play some of the online, and it's perfect. There's no lag. It just works.
It just works. The only thing is you can't drag items around. Other than that, oh, and you can only play with four players.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's flawless.
Yep, you can play with anyone you've ever played with locally. It saves a little key, a little friend code, and you can always play with those people anywhere, as long as they're online and you're online.
You can always type in friend codes, too, of people that, you know, you talk to.
Yep, and our friend codes will be in our forum.
Yep, or somewhere else, maybe in the comments, who knows.
Probably everywhere.
Yeah, so if you got the Mario Kart, you know, put up your friend codes, and, you know, we'll give you ours, you give us yours.
We'll lay down some blue sparks.
Bitches.
There is a problem, though. The Wi-Fi online play, and we're really not sure at this point what is wrong, but it is well known that it's not currently working so well. If you actually find someone and connect to them, it's fantastic. But half the time, it just craps out before it connects to anyone.
Yeah, well, you see, before the game was released today, people who had preview editions of the game were playing, and they only reported problems when they had a bunch of people in the same room on one access point, which is what they had because they were going to Nintendo and doing this, you know, with a whole bunch of press people. But the problem, if you go to the Nintendo Wi-Fi site today, it says there's a message that Mario Kart has, like, intermittent issues. So
we don't know.
Yeah, so what happens is if you try to play without friend codes, if you try to just play worldwide or regional or rival mode, you sit there waiting for quite a while for anyone to join, and usually no one joins, and you don't find any opponents.
I imagine that'll be fixed pretty soon.
Should be fixed soon. But if you find opponents, most of the time what happens is you get, like, it just cancels out, and you get this error. Instead of starting to play the game, like error 18.
Haha, I am error.
Should I talk to River Man?
Bagu knows the way.
Bagu lives in the woods. Does he play Mario Kart? Because I could play with him even though he's in the middle of the woods if he's got a wireless access point.
I should log into HiSpace and see who has some friend codes.
What's Bagu's friend code? I bet you he's dangerous. Yeah, but the online play is great. Oh, there's a few tracks missing from online play, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This game is probably the turning point as, not really the turning point of the DS being awesome, but the turning point as in, I'm not going to play any system but my DS for probably the next month or two.
Yeah. And stupid Trauma Center is the only DS game I got that I haven't beat because I'm on a really hard mission. Surgery.
Yeah.
But Mario Kart basically killed any chances of that being fixed because now I've got to get a gold and an S super rank in every single Grand Prix on every single CC rating.
I'm very happy that just before it came out, I finally beat Castlevania.
Yeah.
Got it out of my system. Dracula's dead again.
Why doesn't he just stay dead?
Honestly, it wasn't really Dracula at the end.
Oh. I wonder what
Dracula's
friend code is.
The end is dumb, but it's dumb in the way that all modern Castlevania game endings are dumb.
All right. As long as it was fun to play, who cares about the ending? There haven't been good game endings in, like, forever.
And the last boss is kind of a challenge.
That's always good, because I don't think the last boss in Mario Kart is going to be a challenge.
Oh, you mean,
me.
The internet.
Oh yeah.
The boss in Mario Kart is the one Japanese kid who got the game the day it came out and has been playing nonstop ever since with an IV.
You know, if I play against that kid, I'm just going to be like, shit my pants.
Great.
Hopefully I'll get like 20 spike shells and I'll have a chance of winning. Are we done about Mario Kart?
Yeah, I think we got it out of our system till we play some more. But if you haven't gotten a DS yet and you're on the fence, it's done. It is now the time to buy one.
Yeah, you really can't. I don't see any other better way to spend video game money than
the DS
and Mario Kart.
The DS stands alone as a primary console at this point. You could have just a DS and be just fine.
Yeah, I mean, the other consoles are kind of dwindling, and even though the Xbox 360 is coming next week or this week or whenever, it's mostly sports games. So unless you're a sports game nut, just get a DS.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other game that we rediscovered, well, I knew about this game for a long time, but I never really got into it.
Yeah.
And we rediscovered it during our emulato. It's called Mule.
M-U-L-E.
With dots in between.
Yeah, it stands for Multiple Use Labor Element.
Equipment.
Equipment. There. I thought it was element.
No, equipment.
Eh.
Basically, we realized, I don't know why I didn't realize it before, it's a German board game for a computer.
It's kind of an old school German board game in that it's a good solid game, but there is kind of a lot of randomness.
There's a little bit too much randomness, and I'm trying to figure out a way to redesign the game with a little less randomness, but it's hard.
Because the game itself is solid. It's actually really cool. You're, well, there's a plot and a story, but forget all that. So basically,
you're four dudes.
There's four dudes, and you're one of them. And you get plots of land that you develop, and on those plots of land, you can produce one of a number of commodities. And some commodities are useful for different things. One commodity is only useful for selling to make money. And at the end of the game, whoever has the highest net worth wins.
Yep. There's some things about the game that are kind of tricky, but it's because of the nature of it being a really, really, really old game.
Yeah, like getting your plots of land, this box goes to each plot of land, and whoever hits their button first gets that plot of land.
But it goes real fast, and it's pretty much a crapshoot.
Yeah.
I mean, you can practice a lot and try to get the really good plots of land adjacent to each other for max bonuses, but yeah, it kind of detracts from the German board game-ness of it.
Not any more than the random-ass events like, oh, pirates came and stole everything, or a meteor just destroyed one of your plots of land.
Or, oh, a monster came and ate all your food.
Ah, that stupid monster.
Yeah, the monster's pretty scary. But, you know, German board games have things like that, but at least when they're in a German board game, technically, they're like, you know they're coming. It's like, kind of like in Settlers, the robber can happen, but you know...
But there is a way to protect yourself from the robber.
And you know about the robber, and you can predict him and prevent him and all
There
sorts
is no
of
way
things.
To predict, prepare, or deal with any disaster in Mule.
Yeah, they're just completely random. Like,
which
oh
in
my
a
God.
Way makes it more like a simulation of real-life economics. You get randomly fucked by the world, and there's nothing you can do about it.
It's true. However, it's a little more random than real life. I mean, you pretty much win at gambling every day.
Yeah.
How do you win at gambling every single time?
Because that's a game mechanic.
Yeah.
To reward you for taking your turn quicker.
It is. That's good. But it seems like, you know, you can't get over it.
See, the main part of the game is making commodities, and you make one of the different commodities, and then you bid, and the bidding's kind of cool. You say if you're a buyer or a seller for each commodity, and then all the buyers stand at the bottom, and all the sellers stand at the top of the screen. And then it says go, and you move your little guy, and you stop at whatever point you decide it would be value you would want to buy or sell. And whenever two of these lines intersect, the transaction occurs.
So if I'm a buyer and I'm willing to pay $50 per unit of energy, and Rim is willing to is trying to sell his energy, you know, let's say he walks down a bit and he stops at like $100, and I stop at $50. We stand there looking at each other, and nothing happens. Then someone caves in and walks over and touches the other guy, and let's say Rim walks down and touches my line, and he'll sell me one unit of whatever, $50.
Or there's always the hilarity of, say I've got the only energy left in the game, and there's none left in, like, the store. Because there's a store, but sometimes it runs out of stuff.
Yeah.
Because the store is only filled by the players.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else needs energy, and they're trying to bid on it, but I won't sell it. And the price just keeps going up.
And then if you have a partner who's down low on the buying side, he just keeps walking up and up and up, and that forces other players who want it more to keep going up and up and up, even if he doesn't really want it.
Yeah, you then can definitely play apples and oranges and collude with people.
And then at the last second when, you know, someone, when the time is about to run out on the auction, you walk down, the other guy walks up, oh, you sold him one energy for like $2,000.
The biggest problem we had with the game was that we weren't sure how to win at first. We weren't sure how many points anything was worth.
We're still not really sure how many points things are
oh,
worth.
Oh, I am now. I finally figured it out.
You figured out exactly?
The only thing I haven't figured out exactly is land. But it looks like land is just a base price plus the price of any mules you've put on it plus the price of any equipment you've put on mules on it.
Oh, all
That's right. What it looks like.
Okay.
And goods are just the you get 1 point for each good times the value of that good at the end of the game.
How do you know what the value of the good is?
Whatever it sells for at the end of the game.
In the store?
In the store, or if it sells normally, whatever the price ends up at. Yeah.
All right. That's okay. But, so, by selling a good...
You'll drive the price down, so then other people have to sell to get something from it.
Yeah, but the idea is that you only want to sell a good if the price now is higher than what it will be at the end of the game.
Yeah, because there's no inherent value in having a good or having a money. You just want to have as much of everything as you can at the end.
I get it now. It's a lot easier. Because I was wondering, it's like, how much is this good going to be worth at the end of the game?
Yep, it's not nearly as complicated as we were making it out to be.
Yeah, it's like, because I'd have, like, extra Smith ore, and I'd be like, the price would be $50. I'd be like, should I sell it for $50? Or will it be worth more than $50 at the end of the game, meaning selling it is dumb because you get 1 point for $1, right? So I couldn't make a decision because I didn't know how the game worked. But now that we kind of know how it works, it's a lot better.
Yep, and if it weren't for the fact that we had Mario Kart, we'd probably play the game again.
Yeah, we'll probably play it again sometime anyway. If we can get maybe some four USB thingies, we can do a little four-score action.
Yeah, I'd like to play with humans instead of computers.
Yeah. The thing is, this game has been, you know, it was real popular back in the day, and it still has a...
Like the 80s.
Kind of this cult following, but it hasn't been remade in a long, long time.
We're going to try to remake it.
At the very least, I'm going to redesign it in a more German-style fashion without trying to destroy what makes the game great.
See, the game also has one other aspect that you can choose to ignore if you want, but each individual player has their value, but the colony as a whole has a value too, and there are kind of two games here. You want to be better than every other player, but at the same time, you want the colony as a whole to survive.
Yeah, that's not really such a big thing in the game.
It talks about it. Like, it'll say, oh, the colony failed, and you all lose.
It's just some text at the bottom of the screen that has no effect on anything.
I think it should be, if we remake it, something more prominent. Like, the colony can fail, and then you all lose.
I don't know.
Because then it's more of a, you know, tragedy of the commons, prisoner's dilemma... Bidding in commodities.
If you could... What would be good is if you set some sort of... system where if the players don't collectively do good enough, so if one guy just bandits everyone else and the colony as a whole doesn't do well enough, that it ends up just hurting people in the game.
Well, I have to play around with it.
Yeah, like, imagine if you're playing kind of like that Lord of the Rings game, even though I don't like that game.
I love that game.
Where, you know, it's like you have to put the tokens in to help everyone. You know, but if you don't put the tokens in, you might do better than everyone else, but Sauron moves closer.
Yep.
And it's kind of scary. Something like that, where if not everyone contributes and makes enough stuff, then, you know, all the Smith ore sucks.
Kind of like in Chrononauts, where if everyone was real neglectful and too many cards were face down, the world ended and the game was over and you all lost.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a lot better mechanic than just, at the end of the game, there's some text that means nothing.
Yeah.
It's just flavor.
Because the game was designed to be one of those edutainment games to teach children about supply and demand.
Yep. It was actually designed by this guy who turned into a woman, and there's like a whole story behind it and how she's dead and stuff.
The developers of this game have kind of a cult following. It's cool and creepy at the same time.
Yeah. And there was a version for the Atari, a version for the Commodore... A version for the NES.
We found this DOS version that was made in 1991.
That was a clone remake.
Yeah, it's a remake, but it's identical.
Yeah, well, it's somewhat identical.
The only difference is the graphics. I looked.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. But didn't they change the theme to, like, Under the Water?
No.
No?
That was in XCOM. XCOM 2 was underwater. XCOM 1 was on the land.
Oh. Damn, underwater aliens.
That had nothing to do with Mule.
Underwater aliens. Don't like those underwater aliens.
I didn't like XCOM 2.
Yeah.
It was the same game, only crappier and with worse graphics.
You know, I like XCOM. I'm just so bad at it, and it's so hard for me to do it for some reason that I don't play it so much.
Man, not only was XCOM one of my favorite games ever, but XCOM was the first game I ever pirated. Wow. I didn't even know I pirated it. Someone just gave me these discs, and then there was a game on it.
The first XCOM I ever played was the demo of XCOM Apocalypse.
Oh, God.
It was okay, but The alien invasion one, it's obviously the best everyone knows.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly difficult game. I make no bones about it.
But you know what? Honestly, it's not as good as Mario Kart.
Oh, Mario Kart. I really want to play it right now.
I think I will.
Because there's a chance that I'll run into some crazy, crazy, crazy kid from Japan who's just good at it, and he'll beat me. And it'll
maybe
be awesome.
He'll have a really awesome emblem that's just scary.
Yeah. You can't, I mean, you know Nintendo, you can't talk in the game. There's almost no way to convey obscenities to other players. Except, you can have a name, and you know there are going to be people named various things.
Aha, Hockey Jockey Man.
And you can actually draw a picture that will be on your car while you race.
It's also floating above your head, and it has the player's name and a little thumbnail of what their picture is. So you can know, if you learn someone's picture, you can see where they are on the track more easily.
Yep, like the first guy I ever raced online, he had a little Yoshi egg, and it had a little skull on it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. We also found this program you can use to turn graphics and like make good icons.
Well, it's a website, and you upload a JPEG or a GIF to the website, and it puts on the screen, basically it resizes and figures out the image into the same resolution as the emblem. And then it's up to you to copy the emblem off the screen and onto your DS.
You can just do that in the GIMP if you want.
You could, but this website does it really well.
Yeah.
It's not just a simple resize.
It's easier than making a spray for the old WAN-based natural selection Counter-Strike Half-Life.
Yeah, you know what's actually surprising is Steam now is really easy to make the sprays.
Yeah.
They added a whole spray thing.
See, I never got to see that because I switched to Linux, and try as I might, Steam does not work in Wine.
Yeah, I got to see it because I used Steam and Half-Life 2 when I played it, and even though I use Linux 99% of the time now, but I didn't use it because I didn't make a spray for it.
Though I take that back. Steam works just fine. The games in Steam don't work.
It's true.
Steam is great. Steam is just some windows, and they open up. I mean,
yeah,
it's not hard to make that work in
Line. They actually changed Steam recently. I don't like it as much now, but what are you going to do?
If I get sick of Mario Kart, I might boot into Windows so I can play some Natural Selection.
I played Natural Selection once the other day. It was pretty good.
I got to say, Natural Selection is probably my favorite, I guess, new era or like this current era of FPSs online.
Yeah, I'm definitely all out of like... You know, my list of things to buy, gizmos and whatnot, a new computer's way at the bottom. But one day, I'm probably going to buy, like, an AMD 64-type machine.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. And I'm either going to buy, like, a wicked gaming computer and then use my current computer as something awesome. Or I'll buy a wicked non-gaming computer to make that my primary PC. And then I'll turn my computer into a gaming computer that can be all Windows all the time.
Or VMware.
VMware would be good if it was free. Well, it kind of is with a new thing, but...
Yeah, we still have to see how that new thing pans out.
It panned out pretty good. I just don't know how useful it would be for playing Steam.
I think it will be eventually, but right now, at least our computers are not fast enough to do that as well as we would like to.
No, not at all. Especially not yours.
Yeah. See, I'm still running a Thunderbird gigahertz with a giga RAM, and it's real old and slow.
Yeah.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussion. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.